So remembering as we move into our meditation, as we move into the quiet space, that part of what we're doing is practicing peacefulness with whatever arises. So I'm sure you're a good breather. You've been breathing for some years. We use the technique of paying attention to the breath. We use that technique in support of presence and peace. So maybe take one more extra slow breath. And then a wave of relaxation through the body. Continuing to relax the body. And let your hands be heavy. Letting go of what's easy to let go of in the neck and shoulders. Letting go of what's easy to let go of in the jaw. The lips. The right eye. And the left eye. And then bringing your attention to the sensations of the breath. So your mind will wander. That's actually natural and normal. So you can say okay to your mind or even thank your mind. And then out of care, so you notice thinking, oh, thinking, okay, mind, thank you, mind. So very kind, peaceful, practicing non-judging with the mind. And then coming back to the sensations of the breath. So not just a thought of the breath, the actual feeling of the breath. And you come back out of compassion as an action of care for the exhausted mind. Feeling the body breathing. Resting your mind into the sensations of breath. practicing non-judging. Just right here. Body breathing. Allowing the process to unfold. Keep coming back to body breathing, coming back out of compassion. So that the meditation is an expression of care. Body breathing. Conditions are imperfect. It's coming back without judgment. The attention is friendly. Body breathing. Just right here. Noticing if there's any struggle and if there is, having a little empathy or friendliness for yourself or support for yourself. Just right here, body breathing. Heart beating. We're doing this together. If you choose, take the next few moments and listen to the sounds in all directions. And then, as an experiment, listening to your body, not so much for any words or messages, but just kind of soft, open, receptive listening to body. Listening to the body breathing. And then listening for, if this makes sense to you, listening for peace. Not so much with your intellect, but with your heart or your body. And then sending, just in your own way, sending and receiving support and friendliness, for this group, for our friends here, our Sangha. sending and receiving, and however you do this is just fine. It could be a radiating sense or a breathing sense or phrases, just in your own way, sending and receiving. And we'll finish with a symbolic gesture of bringing your hands to touch and taking a small bow to honor the practice. And then you can let yourself shift and move as needed. I do believe we have announcements now.
Yes, we do. And thank you for the lovely meditation. And should we turn the recording off now? And we can start again when she does the Dharma. Anyway, a warm welcome to...
Okay, my friends. Thank you so much for your generous support and Mary Kelly, that lovely little mini Dharmette on Donna on generosity and how it ripples out into the world and makes such a big impact. I like to think of the Sangha, the community that we are here, as a place of sanity in this very difficult world, right? This place that we can come to. I haven't done this in a while, but I used to teach yoga teacher trainings, and I really loved encouraging people to think of a sangha, right? That would be a yoga sangha, yoga community, but this sangha too, as a place where we're actually deliberately bringing ourselves together to raise each other up. It's really amazing that we have that opportunity to do that. I mean, how many other groups are you a part of? Maybe you're a part of a lot of groups that do this, that deliberately and consciously lift each other up. So it's quite an amazing thing that we get to practice together. And to know that all of you are welcome. I'm very happy to see you. And if you want to keep your camera off, I'm very happy to not see you, but I know that you're there listening. And if you're listening on the recording, just to welcome all of you here. Whatever state your body's in tonight, whatever state your mind is in tonight, whatever your personality is, whatever your race, your gender, your age, that there's space for us together in this community to come together and study, to contemplate. I like that word contemplate, because study sounds intellectual, but to contemplate, which somehow to me includes, right, the heart, the emotional center, to study these teachings, these practices. My topic for tonight is why speech. I wanted to talk about speech. It's a thread of the Eightfold Path that I've been following with you all. So why speech? I found this quote by Jodi Picoult. She's an author. She said, she probably wrote, "Words are like eggs dropped from great heights. You can no more call them back than ignore the mess they leave when they fall." That is such a great image, right? Like an egg dropping splat. Words can be like that sometimes. They splat. You can't call them back and they leave a big mess. So this topic of why speech is part of the Eightfold Path. I'm interested that Mary Page is going to talk on or teach a little workshop for you all, those of you that are interested, on Wise View, which is part of the Eightfold Path. It's really the part of the fundamental teachings of the Buddha. These teachings are methods, they're instructions, they're actually instructions to lead us to an awakened heart, an awakened life. So focusing on our speech in particular, focusing on our speech, invites us into a focus on relationship. So we're in relationship with ourselves. We just did a meditation, right? In relationship with ourselves and in relationship with others. Our speech in particular is looking at our relationships and how we're navigating that. Relationship with self and relationship with others, how we speak to ourselves, how we speak to others. So we can start our investigation of speech. We can start that investigation with a wise understanding or wise view that life has both beauty and pain. I'm sure you've experienced that. You probably experienced that maybe even in the meditation or in today. We can reflect back on all the different changes that have happened just in the last half hour, let alone the whole day. You know, I like to watch TV. Shh, don't tell anybody, but I do like to watch TV. And sometimes, like, I don't know, do you have this sense? Sometimes I have this sense, like, I'm the same, and I've kind of been the same for a while, and it's just kind of the same. I don't know, it's a little bit of a delusion or a misunderstanding. So sometimes when I watch TV, I notice when the season shifts from one season to the next, how the actors look totally different. And maybe they have an internal sense, like I have an internal sense of sometimes being completely the same. But actually, if we started to take a little snapshot and look at ourselves and look at this world, we would, right, we would start to see with this wise view, this wise understanding, that everything's changing and that life itself holds both pain and beauty. It holds birth and death. It holds light and dark. Life is woven with these opposites. So right in the midst of human life, we can begin to sense within us there's the possibility of meeting this wild ride. It is a bit of a wild ride sometimes. We can sense the possibility of meeting this wild ride with a little bit, or maybe even a lot more compassion. And a much greater wisdom and understanding. So we can sense within ourselves and we can start to see with our practice the potential for the awakening in our own hearts. So that we start our practice with this wise understanding, this understanding that everything's changing and that there's the possibility of awakening in our heart. And then the second step on this Eightfold Path, or the second method, is looking at our intentions. So if we wish to fulfill the potential of a wise and compassionate life, a wakeful life, if we wish to fulfill that potential, we need to begin to work with our intentions. Our intentions are aspirations, the intentions of harmlessness, the intention of love, the intention of compassion, intention of non-cruelty, the intention of letting go. And then I think it's very interesting. So this first two, wise understanding, we could call it wise view, and then the second one, wise intention. These first two are considered to be in the basket, a little basket. You can put these two in the little basket of wisdom. And then the next little basket is a little basket of our actions, our ethical behavior. And the first one, so we move from our aspirations, our beautiful aspirations of compassion, our beautiful aspirations of letting go, and our understanding that there is the possibility of awakening, there is the possibility of the end of suffering. So we move from these wisdoms, these ideas, into our behavior. And the first thing we come to in this Eightfold Path is our speech, right? How we speak. Before we get to any other actions, before we get to our livelihood, before we get to our effort, before we get to our mindfulness, we begin to look at speech. So we start to look at our speech not to be moralistic or, there's some lists, there's some Buddhist lists that I'm going to give you tonight. There's some lists that deal with the speech, but it's not about being rigid or moralistic or dogmatic. But it is a process. Instead of thinking of it as like a set of rules, we can think of it as a process to refine our actions to come into alignment with our aspirations. Does that make sense? Sometimes we might think, oh, I've got to do this thing, and I told a lie, or I gossiped, or one of the things, and we can be a little hard on ourselves. And of course, we should learn from when we harm ourselves or others with our speech or in our action, of course we should learn. But it's not about getting it all straight and perfect. Things are always messy and black and white. But what it is about, it's like working with our speech is an action of devotion, right? What do we devote ourselves to? We devote ourselves to that which we love. We love our family, our communities. We love these teachings. So the speech, the working with our speech becomes an action of devotion to this world. So that we can begin to offer a little drop at a time, like a big bucket, and we drop little drops at a time of wisdom and compassion. We're offering to the world when we start to work with our speech, the very ease that we ourselves are longing for. So, why speech comes from our wisdom. It comes from our wisdom. And all of the different path factors, which I'm not going to talk about too much, but all the different path factors, I'm a little bit talking about them sequential right now, but they also, you could think of them sequential, but you could also think of them as strengthening and reinforcing each other. So we have this idea of basic compassion, the intention to not harm. The intention to not harm other beings, the intention to not harm ourselves or others. And we put that into action with our speech. So the Buddhist path is not just about meditating. In some ways, I think of the meditation as, well, it's the third basket. We have three baskets here tonight. It's the third basket of a development of the mind, right? Our meditation is a development of the mind heart. We have to include that. The citta includes the heart, the mind heart. It's the development of the mind. But the Buddhist path is not just about the meditation. It's about really how we are in the world. Are we relating from these beautiful ideas of non-harming, of love, of renunciation? Are we relating from that? So we have to, in some ways, put our ideas into action. Otherwise, it's just good ideas. So how do we live moment to moment? You might think, oh, if I were to go on a 6-month retreat, I would be really enlightened, which you might be actually with a lot of deep practice. But the Eightfold Path isn't just about meditation. The Eightfold Path includes our relationship to how we are in the world to others. It's quite appropriate and important for our daily life. So we put these good ideas of wisdom and compassion and clarity, we put these good ideas into action so that it's more than just a good idea. And when we work with our speech, that this is the place where we can grow. This is a place where we can grow. It's a place where we can practice deeply so that our practice isn't just about retreat. Sometimes maybe your health doesn't allow you to go on retreat, or your finances don't allow you to go on retreat, or there can be many, many different reasons why you can't go on retreat, but that does not mean that you're not on this path. Why speech is just as much as part of the Eightfold Path as wise meditation, wise mindfulness, and concentration. So, our speech, our wise speech, is a necessary factor of our awakening. We spend so much time speaking, all the time speaking. Some of us more than others, but everybody, we have to speak. A lot of words come out a lot of times on automatic pilot. Words can come out sometimes by accident. They can be destructive. Sometimes our words can keep ourselves and others asleep. But other times our words can bring awakening. Imagine what our society, it's a little boggling actually, but just imagine as if the society, if people spoke the truth. If people spoke the truth, what would it be like if people spoke truth? Truthfulness is a prerequisite for trust. Truthfulness is the foundation for a healthy relationship. You can't have trust without truthfulness, and you can't have a healthy relationship without truthfulness and trust. It's very difficult to have any relationship without trust, without truth. This includes a relationship with ourselves. Can we speak truthfully to ourselves? And what sort of stories do we tell ourselves? And what sort of stories do we tell others? Reminds me a little bit of those Byron Katie questions that I spoke about. One of the times I was with you all recently, Byron Katie has these questions where she asks us to ask ourselves, is it true when we have a thought? And really, you know, our speech is just thoughts said aloud, right? Said out loud to other people. So Byron Katie recommends investigating our thoughts, and perhaps we could even investigate our speech. Is it true? Is it true? Can you be absolutely sure it's true? You know, the story, maybe you have a story about yourself that you've always been this way and you always will be that way. You can ask yourself, is that true? Can you know that to be absolutely true? And what happens when you believe that thought or that story? And who would you be without that story? They're beautiful questions. So the thing is, we don't always know the truth, and we don't always know the truth. There can be a lot of reasons why we don't. One really big reason is that one really big reason that we're out of touch with the truth is because we're often really busy, and we're surrounded by so much that is not true. There's a lot. It's like a pandemic or an epidemic of a misuse of speech and truth. It made me think of that word, double speak, or corporate double speak, you know, like downsizing for layoffs, or the military might say servicing the target for bombing. And then I ran across this study, according to Forbes in 2022. Almost a third of American social media users. So I think that's almost everybody nowadays, American social media users. So according to Forbes in 2022, almost a third of American social media users reported using emojis or alternative phrases to subvert content moderation. So people on social media are deliberately kind of bending things around to obscure the truth. So a misuse of speech and truth. Sometimes scientists or media or politicians will pick the data to match the story they want to tell. Or we have words like we have this the phrase efficient nukes, that's just sort of not really speaking the truth, right? I don't know. And then politics, I don't think I need to talk about politics anymore. I think that's something we all know about the double speak and the misuse of truth. And then there's advertising. The advertising, all the things that tell us that if we just bought this product or took this medication, things would be really awesome and you would be really happy and everything would be perfect, right? So we are surrounded by lies. Yeah. This is what I mean by, oh, it's so amazing that we can have a community together where we're purposefully on purpose. Purposefully, on purpose, raising each other up, speaking the truth to each other. So we can foster speech that comes from our deeper knowing. We can practice this. I mean, this is the great thing about impermanence. Impermanence implies that there's the possibility of improvement. We have neuroplasticity. We can learn new habits with our speech. We can raise ourselves and each other up so we can foster speech that comes from our own deeper knowing. So, from Thich Nhat Hanh around speech, this is a long quote and I'll go slow with it to make sure you catch it. But I think it's really beautiful. Thich Nhat Hanh said, aware of the suffering caused by unmindful speech and the inability to learn to others, I am committed to cultivating loving speech and deep listening in order to bring joy and happiness to others and relieve others of their suffering. I mean, so beautiful. I am committed to cultivating loving speech and deep listening in order to bring joy and happiness to others and relieve others of their suffering. Knowing that words can create happiness or suffering. Do you know that? I think probably you do, right? Words can create happiness or suffering. So, knowing that words can create happiness or suffering, I am determined to speak truthfully with words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. I am determined to speak truthfully with words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. I will not spread news that I do not know to be certain. And I will not criticize or condemn things of which I am not sure. I will refrain from uttering words that can cause division or discord, or that can cause the family or the community to break. I'll read that one again. I will refrain from uttering words that can cause division or discord, or that can cause the family or the community to break. I am determined to make all efforts to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, however small. This is like, sometimes when I hear wise speech, I think, oh, it just sounds so nice. But actually, it's very fierce. It is nice. But it's very fierce. It takes a lot of courage. I am determined, listen to this. I am determined to make all efforts to reconcile and resolve all conflicts, however small. Holy cannoli. That's beautiful, right? Like, that's a beautiful training. We can think of this as a training, as a practice. And it's a practice, not a perfect, right? It's a practice that we can embark upon. It is an expression of deep care. Can you hear that in this quote? As an expression of deep care for the world, an expression of deep care for the community. So, I've been in my other classes teaching on wise speech recently, and I read this quote, and somebody in one of the classes, he said this from this sentence. Words, I am determined to speak words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. So somebody said he was I don't know, he was out somewhere and he heard a little girl who was singing, and he started talking to her and he asked her, "Do you like to sing?" And she said, "Yes." And he said that he told her that she had a beautiful voice. and that he could see, like, she totally lit up, right? That we can do that for each other, that we can light each other up and we can draw that out. When I was teaching yoga teacher trainings, part of my job was to give feedback to new teachers. It's so hard to be a yoga teacher, like the right and the left. Was it left and right or right and left? It's so hard. Like, there's so many little things when you're first learning to teach yoga. And so it was my job to give feedback to people. And I wanted, it was one of the things that I spent a lot of time thinking about, how to give feedback. Because why speech? It's not like, it's truthful, right? It has this underneath this foundation of non-harming, but there's also truthfulness in it. So to speak in a way that was kind and to help the person, the new budding teacher, right? To encourage them and to point out where they're doing really well and also give little pointers where they could have a little more practice and a little more growth. And to do that deliberately, could we do that for our family members, for the children around us? Right, to raise them up, to help them shine from their hearts. And also, but at least sometimes we have to resolve a conflict or we need to say something that might be hard to hear. So practicing with that. And then the other thing in this quote, one of the things that I really think is quite interesting is that he talks about, Thich Nhat Hanh talks about a deep listening in order to bring joy and happiness. So, and deep listening in order to relieve compassion. I mean, in some ways, when we start to talk about speech, we also need to talk about listening. It's like, it has to be, right? Like, they go together. Unless all of us are just going to be talking with nobody listening. But that doesn't make sense, right? Because this speech is our relationship with our community, our relationship with the world. So it includes listening. So compassionate listening is to help whatever or whoever you're listening to help them suffer less. It is an unhindered receptivity. It's an unhindered receptivity to the moment, to the person right in front of you. Because so often we get hurried by our own personal agenda. Oh, I want to say this. I want to impress this person. And we forget to actually really listen. This is why I brought the listening into the meditation. I don't know how it landed or if it resonated with you. But this practice, again, it's all a practice, this practice of listening with calm and understanding, we can start to ease the suffering of another person. And I would say, even in our own meditation, if we are quiet and listening with calm and receptivity and open-heartedness, we can begin to ease our own suffering too. So listening can become a very deep practice. You have to empty yourself. You have to leave space in order to listen. You have to leave space. We have to leave space. What about leaving space to the people we consider our enemies? It's such a harsh word, but people we consider to be difficult or unlike us. Can we leave space to begin to listen? When we show our capacity for listening and understanding, then it fosters this aura or this energy or this aspect of respect, right? Right? Like that sense of respect. And then change is possible. Then healing is possible. And then peace is possible. So there was a person here. I live up in Northern California, just outside, just east of Fort Bragg on the coast. And I have a small center where people are coming now to do little self-retreat, like they come for a place in nature. And this woman was here this week and we were meditating together. And then she got up and she went outside. We had just been meditating. We got out and she went outside and there were two big deer with the antlers. They were bucks, little 3-point bucks. And I don't know, there might have been a fox out there too, because the fox always hangs out with the deer for some reason. But at any rate, she went outside and then she just stopped. And it was like she was listening to the deer. Now, the deer weren't talking to her, right? And it wasn't an intellectual, this kind of deep listening isn't necessarily an intellectual thing. It's like listening that's open and receptive and quiet, listening with the body to the deer in this situation. It was so beautiful because she was watching the deer, I was watching her, right? Like this sense of peace and quiet, like this receptivity, this kind of listening without an agenda. I don't think she had an agenda for the deer, right? Just kind of curious and open. We can do this with each other. We can listen with our hearts, listen with our bodies, a quietness, with a kind of quietness to let in the mystery and awe of the people around us. It's a simple willingness to be with. It sounds a little bit like mindfulness to me too, right? Like the sense of heart opening. It sounds a little bit like loving kindness too, also, like all these qualities. So I have homework for you all if you so choose. Your homework is to do a practice of deep listening this week, maybe in your meditation or maybe with a loved one or maybe with your own body and heart. When we listen to our own body, we're not necessarily going to get like a story or intellectual thing, but right, like this listening with this felt sense of quietness with respect and care. So that's your homework. You got it? A deep listening practice. So wise speech. The Buddha said with wise speech, there are four kinds of speech to abstain from. The first one is to abstain from false speech. This is to abstain from lying and to put that into positive, which is to say the truth, to speak the truth. To abstain from harsh speech. So sometimes when we have harsh speech, it's indicative or it's an indicator, it's like a signal that, oh, there might be some aversion going on in there, some pushing something away, right? Like that harsh speech is like a little mindfulness bell. When I hear it coming out of my mouth, like, uh-oh, what's going on? There's like a little like something's going on. We're also to abstain from malicious or divisive speech. So abstain from the intention to harm and divide. I think this one's kind of interesting. In my family of origin growing up, there was like this way where we bonded with each other by putting other people down, other people outside the family. And it was this sort of double-edged sword of like feeling the family unit, but we're actually separating ourselves from the people that were outside the family. I thought that was kind of interesting to think about and something for me to practice with for sure in my life. So we're to abstain from divisive speech. So abstain from trying to divide ourselves from others. And we're also to abstain from idle speech, speech with no purpose or use. This one's hilarious. No purpose, and that can happen, right? Like doo 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 chat. So this one I always think about sometimes how when I used to teach more in person, I actually loved having a little bit of what on the surface could sound like idle speech at the beginning of classes with people. But it wasn't because it was mindful and it was deliberate and on purpose with me to make a small connection, an easy, light connection with someone I didn't necessarily know that well. So as soon as we bring mindfulness to idle speech, not necessarily idle anymore, right? If it's got a purpose. So we're to abandon these four kinds of speech, false, harsh, malicious, and idle. So on the positive side, we're looking for and cultivating speech that's truthful, gentle, pleasing, that speech that reunites people that have been divided. So I wanted to read a sutta for you, the Vaka Sutta. It's from the Anguttara Nikaya. And it starts monks, but we'll just say for our purposes, Sangha, which is us. Sangha, A statement endowed with five factors is well spoken, not ill spoken. I'm going to say that again. So, Sangha, a statement endowed with five factors is well spoken, not ill spoken. It is blameless and unfaulted by knowledgeable people. Which five? It is spoken at the right time. It is spoken in truth. It is spoken affectionately. It is spoken beneficially. It is spoken with a mind of goodwill. A statement endowed with these five factors is well spoken, not ill spoken. It is blameless and unfaulted by knowledgeable people. Okay, so of course there can be some gray areas, but I think these five are actually really helpful. And we can start to work with them and make little adjustments as we go, and we can learn as we can go. So the five are, it's spoken at the right time. So say I have something that I need to talk about with my husband that's actually quite important, but I have to choose the right time. Maybe when he's coming home from work and is really tired, that maybe isn't the right time, right? So we have to choose our time as best we can. Always, conditions are always imperfect. So we're just making the choices as best we can within those conditions. So spoken at the right time, spoken in truth. Sometimes we might exaggerate. Have you ever done this? I do it sometimes, exaggerate to make a point a little bit. So we're not going to do that. So spoken in truth. So at the right time, in truth, and then spoken affectionately. Like something that's talked about is with kindness, right? So with kindness. And something that's useful. So here it says beneficial. That's useful. So sometimes, remember that Thich Nhat Hanh, he was talking about resolving all conflicts. Sometimes we need to resolve a conflict, and that can be hard. And it's important. It's useful to resolve conflicts. So something that's beneficial. Sometimes we might have things to say that are beneficial, but they'll be hard to say. Spoken with the mind of goodwill, right? When the mind is coming from a place of goodwill, we're more likely to say it in a kind way that can be heard, and we're more likely to resolve the conflict or the situation. So mindfulness really with these five. So what are they again? The right time, truth, spoken kindly, and it's useful, and with a mind of goodwill. And what can really help with these is mindfulness, right? We have to know what's happening inside our own hearts. We have to know what's happening inside our own heart and mind. Otherwise, something unkind might just pop out, just like that, a little pop. So mindfulness allows us, with some practice, to discern what to say and helps us anticipate results. But conditions are imperfect, so we do what we can. And then we keep trying. We keep trying. We try out of devotion, out of care, out of love for this world, for our family, for our friends, for our community. So mindfulness allows us to discern maybe a little bit better what to say and help us anticipate results. Okay. And then gosh, I have another, let's see what I'm gonna skip ahead because we're running out of time. Okay, I have another sutta quote. Again, from the Anguttara Nikaya, about wise speech. And you don't have to memorize this or write it down. You can just let it kind of soak it. Oh, you can practice your deep listening, listening with your bones, maybe. So herein, someone avoids false speech and abstains from it. They speak the truth, are devoted to truth, reliable, worthy of confidence, not a deceiver of people. Being at a meeting or amongst people or in the midst of their relatives or in a society or in the king's court and called upon and asked as a witness to tell what he knows or they know, they answer, if they know nothing, I know nothing. And if they know the answer, They answer, I know. And if he has seen nothing, he answers, I have seen nothing. And if she has seen, she answers, I have seen. Thus, she never knowingly speaks a lie, either for the sake of her own advantage, or for the sake of another person's advantage, or for the sake of any advantage whatsoever. She avoids slanderous speech and abstains from it. What she has heard here, she does not repeat there, so as to cause dissension there. And what she has heard there, she does not repeat here, so as to cause dissension here. Thus, she unites those that are divided, and those that are united, she encourages. Concord gladdens her. He delights and rejoices in concord, and it is concord that he spreads by her words. He avoids harsh language and abstains from it. He speaks such words as are gentle, soothing to the ear, loving, such words as go to the heart, and are courteous, friendly, and agreeable to many. They avoid idle chatter and abstain from it. They speak at the right time, in accordance with facts, speak what is useful, speak of the Dharma and the discipline. Their speech is like a treasure, uttered at the right moment, accompanied by reason, moderate and full of sense. So we can think about the power of our words, the power of words in this world. Words can be a source of healing and connection. Words can be a source of healing. Words can make a difference. Speech can make a difference over a whole lifetime. So I have a close friend too. She never talks about other friends or other people. So I know when I'm in her presence that I'm safe. It's such a beautiful gift, actually, to feel that anything I say to her will stay with her, that it doesn't go, right? It's such a beautiful offering that we can offer a wise speech to the world. So with our speech, we have the power to create happiness. We have the power to create ease and liberation for ourselves and for our communities.